Ana. Not. Anubuya. Experiencing. Na. Not. Janati. Knows. Puman. A person. Vishyatikshnata. The sharpness of material enjoyment. Nirvijyate. Becomes aloof. Swayam. Himself. Tasmat. From that. Natata. Not like that. Vinadihi. Whose intelligence is changed. Parahai. By others. So translation, material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness. But one cannot give it up unless one has personally experienced how much suffering it is. Therefore, one should be allowed to remain in so-called material enjoyment while simultaneously advancing in knowledge to experience the misery of this false material happiness. Then, without help from others, one will find material enjoyment detestable. Those whose minds are changed by others do not become as renounced as those who have personal experience. So you can repeat. Material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness. But one cannot give it up. Unless one has personally experienced how much suffering it is. Therefore, one should be allowed to remain in so-called material enjoyment while simultaneously advancing in knowledge to experience the misery of this false material happiness. Then, without help from others, one will find material enjoyment detestful. Those whose minds are changed by others do not become as renounced as those who have personal experience. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It is said that unless a woman becomes pregnant, she cannot understand the trouble of giving birth to a child. Bunja ki vuchuve prasava vedana. The word bunja means a sterile woman. Such a woman cannot give birth to a child. How then can she perceive the pain of delivery? According to the philosophy of Prajapati Daksha, a woman should first become pregnant and then experience the pain of childbirth. Then if she is intelligent, she will not want to be pregnant again. Actually, however, this is not a fact. Sex enjoyment is so strong that a woman becomes pregnant and suffers at the time of childbirth, but she becomes pregnant again despite her experience. According to Daksha's philosophy, one should become implicated in material enjoyment so that after experiencing the distress of such enjoyment, one will automatically renounce. Material nature, however, is so strong that although a man suffers at every step, he will not cease his attempts to enjoy. Under the circumstances, unless one gets the association of a devotee like Narada Muni or his servant in the disciplic succession, one's dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awakened. It is not a fact that because material enjoyment involves so many painful conditions, one will automatically become detached. One needs the blessings of a devotee like Narada Muni. Then one can renounce his attachment for the material world. The young boys and girls of the Krishna consciousness movement have given up the spirit of material enjoyment not because of practice, but by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. So, nanu bhuyana channati puman vishaya tikshnatam Nivijate svayam tasman natatha fina diparahai. Om Gana Timurandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur of Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So let's analyze this verse before we go and discuss the main point, which is that you cannot become detached from this material world simply by experiencing material happiness. The first line here says, material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness. Now, that's not actually true. In one sense, you can say it's true because as much as you're attached to this material world, you'll enjoy. But what is material enjoyment anyway? Material enjoyment is the cessation of distress. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives this example in terms of the dunking stool punishment. I don't know if any of you heard of the dunking stool punishment, but that's a punishment that used to be there in the UK, in America, maybe Australia too. I'm not sure about that. That's where they would take the criminal and put him on a seesaw. You know what a seesaw is? No. You know, a seesaw like the children play on? So they tie the criminal to one end of the seesaw. And that end of the seesaw would be over the water. And then they would gradually lower him into the water and hold him there, I guess 3-4 minutes is about the maximum, right? That someone, of course there are some yogis who can do more than that. They can stay under the water for a long time, and certainly I think frogs can stay under water for months at a time. But in any case, they would lower him there and he'd be suffering because he couldn't breathe. And then they bring him out, and then he could breathe. And then he was thinking, this is ecstasy, because I can breathe. But breathing is not ecstasy. I mean, if I tell any of you here, please breathe, are you experiencing happiness? No, it doesn't give me any happiness. It's only when my breath is being impeded or stopped that breathing gives me happiness. So just like this morning, I woke up and it was very cold. So what made me happy is putting on this coat. But now it's starting to get warm and it's making me unhappy. So you see that the coat isn't the cause of the happiness or the unhappiness. It's actually, the happiness is actually the cessation of the disturbing pain. Or let's take lust, for example. Lust is an imbalance. Imbalance, you want something, and once you have it, it stops that particular imbalance, and you think you're happy. But there's no positive happiness in the material world. Positive happiness comes only from connection with Krishna. That's the only time we can experience positive happiness, because the nature of the soul is that it's part and parcel of Krishna, and the only way the soul can enjoy is being with Krishna. So, it's not that material enjoyment is the cause of this unhappiness. It's material attachment is the cause of the unhappiness. Because if you're not attached, you won't be unhappy either. And you won't be happy. As much as you want to experience happiness in this world or attached to happiness, that's as much as you're going to experience distress. But the ultimate cause of unhappiness is basically our desire to turn our face away from Krishna, Krishna Bhakti Mukha. That's the cause of our unhappiness. The ultimate cause is that we turned our face away from Krishna and we don't want to be Krishna conscious. So, anyways, let's get on to the whole topic here. The topic is that Daksha is making the proposal that one has to experience the misery in order to become detached. So I'm going to give some stories that illustrate that he's wrong. And one of the funny stories that Srila Prabhupada told, and it's from the Puranas, was the story of King Indra. Once upon a time, King Indra, there's several stories about King Indra. King Indra seems to be always getting himself in trouble because he's not a pure devotee, he's a sadkama devotee. In other words, he has some material desires that he wants to be a devotee too. And generally, the demigods are sadkama devotees. So once upon a time, King Indra offended Brihaspati, his spiritual master. Actually, there's several instances of this. And Brihaspati cursed him to become a pig. So Indra went down to the earth planet, because they don't have any pigs in the heavenly planet. Not alive. So he went down to the heavenly planet, and he became a very nice male pig. And as a pig, he did what pigs normally do. Actually, it's described he got married. It's actually interesting, because pigs don't get married usually. I've never seen a Swayamvara ceremony for pigs, have you? You know. Swayamvara, that's actually good. Swayamvara. Very nice, thank you. I have to remember that. So anyway, so he got married and he had a nice pig wife with beautiful curly tail. And he had nice piglets, little children, and they were all running around. Forgot about his position as Indra. So after a while, things got a little tough in the heavenly planets because they needed someone to manage things. I mean, Indra has servants too. It's not that he's just up there in the heavenly planets watching the apsaras all the time do their Bharatanatyam dancing or hula dancing or whatever, or belly dancing or whatever you may call it. So he has a lot of servants. He has to administer things. He's the head administrator. He's like the temple president for the whole universe. Lord Brahma is like the Brahman for the whole universe, and Indra is the temple president. So Lord Brahma is the guru. Anyway, so what happened? Actually, we'll tell a story of how it's dangerous to be temple president in a second. So anyway, so what happened? We'll finish with this story first. So what happened is that they sent some messengers down. You know, Indra, you better come back, you know, we need you. You know, your curse is over. Brihaspati says, you know, it's all right, you can come back. And Indra said, no, I'm not coming back. Because what about my family here? I'm enjoying so much. This is nectar. You know, my little cute little piglets and my cute little wife, or big wife. Not little wife, okay. So, the piglets tend to be obese. So, and then they went back and told Brihaspati, you know, what should we do? Brihaspati said, well, start killing his family members. Arrange for them to die. So one after the other, they were killed. The little piglets died. They became, bacon or something like that? Whatever people make from pigs. And then his wife died, and then the butcher was getting ready to, kill Indra with the pig. And then Indra just remembered that he had somewhere else to go. And he agreed to go back to the heavenly planet. So in other words, he didn't give up, even in spite of enjoying in such a gross way. I mean, in Sanskrit, pigs are called vidbhujam. Vidbhujam, vidbhujam means stool eaters. I mean, you can't think of a more gross way to enjoy. And still he didn't give it up. It's interesting. So, actually I said I'd tell a story about temple president, so let's see if it relates at all to the topic of class. Anyway, so once upon a time in Lord Ramchandra's reign, a dog came to him. And the dog complained, because in those days the dogs could complain to the king. And the dog complained to the king, my dear king, there's a Brahmin who's beating me. I'll tell the story very quickly. There's a Brahmin who's beating me, so they called for the Brahmana, because even dogs had justice in those days. So they called for the Brahmana, and they said, did you beat this dog? And the Brahmana said, yes, because I was hungry. You know, when people are hungry, they have bad tempers, because the blood sugar goes down. So he said, yes, I've beaten the dog, and therefore there was some discussion, how should we punish the Brahmin? Finally, the dog said, you should punish the Brahmin by making him temple president. It was a dog's judgment. And everybody was saying, why should someone be rewarded for beating a dog or doing something simple? And there was some discussion, and finally Lord Ramchandra said, ask the dog. Because in those days, dogs could talk. And so they asked the dog, and the dog explained, that previously I was temple president, and because I was temple president, I had to suffer all the reactions of all the sinful activity going on in my temple. So, as a result, I became a dog. So we're going to make this Brahman a temple president. So I'm not trying to scare you. because make the Brahman a temple president, because in the future, that's what will happen to him. And Prabhupada also said, let's be talking about GBCs. Prabhupada said Yamaraj made a mistake and he had to become a Shudra. And Prabhupada said the GBCs are like Yamaraj, not in the sense of killing people, but not yet. But they're like Yamaraj in the sense that they're Krishna's administrators or Prabhupada's administrators, said if they make a mistake, they'll have to take birth as a Shudra in their next life. So, anyway, so we'll see you all next life. If you see some Shudra walking around in India, then you know, just say Hare Krishna, give them some prasadam. So, getting back to the story. So we see the story of Indra. He was exposed to gross material unhappiness, or happiness as the case may be, and he didn't become detached. Many cases of Indra. Another case is that he had an illicit relationship with a sage's wife, Gashya Muni's wife, and he got cursed to lose his masculinity, and then finally he had to get a transplant from a ram to get back his masculinity. But still, he didn't give up his material desires. So this doesn't work like that, if you give up your material desires so easily. Another story from the Vedic literatures is the story of Puruva and Urvasi. There was this one gentleman, his name was Puruva, and he fell in love with this Heavenly Society girl, Urvasi, who had been forced to come down to the Earth planet because she defended Mitra and Varuna, who became agitated by seeing her. So, anyway, so she agreed to get married to him, and she said, I'll get married to you as long as you only give me food cooked in ghee. No raw food. No vegan food, just food cooked in ghee. And also, I never want to see you without your clothes on, and also you have to take care of my pet lambs. So these are the three conditions for her marriage. So anyway, so they got married, but then because she was from the Heavenly Society, Indra wanted her back. So Indra sent these Gandharvas to get her back. And the way they got her back is they stole in the middle of the night her lambs that were being taken care of by the king, Puruva. And when she woke up and heard that her lambs were gone, and she saw her husband lying there, she said, get up, you rascal, you're not protecting my lambs. So he was so disturbed that he had just woken up and wasn't in the best of consciousness, that he ran out to get the lambs back without his clothes on. So she saw him without his clothes on, which was a violation of the principles of their marriage, the prenuptial agreement. And as a result, she left. And so at that point, he became so depressed that he started to wander all over the earth, just looking for her. Oh, where is my Urvasi? Oh, where is she gone? And basically, he found her one time, and she said, all right, once a year, we can be together. And so the rest of the year he was counting down the days. Like sometimes they have this in the West, how many days till Christmas? You have that here? No, 364 days. So he was doing 364 days to Urvasi, 363, 362, 361, and his whole life was meditating on it. Even though the rest of the year he was miserable. And then what happened is that eventually she said, all right, you want to be with me more? And she created an artificial, you know, clone, as they say. And he wasn't satisfied with that. And eventually he just started meditating and doing yoga and performing a sacrifice and eventually went back to home, back to Urvasi. Anyway, to the heavenly planet. So there was so much misery, and he never overcame that misery, simply by being miserable. And of course, this is what Krishna says in the Gita. Avitam Ganametena Gyani No Nichavayana Kamarupena Kontiya Disparena Analena Cha. When you try to satisfy your senses, it's like throwing petrol on a fire. That it doesn't put out the fire, at least, for a second maybe it appears like the fire is going to be put out, but the fire is further inflamed. So avritam ganametena, and you're never satisfied, and it burns like fire. In other words, the more you try to enjoy, the more you get miserable in this material world. I mean, that's just the way things are designed. However, you don't learn your lesson by that. The reason is material kshane padachos vatova. Vatova vipadyeta graha vratanam dandagopir vishatam tamishram punak punas charvita charvananam. Because you turn your face away from Krishna, which I described in the beginning. Material not Krishna. Then even if someone gives you good instruction, even if you have so much experience in this material world, then tamishram, you're in ignorance. That's Krishna's illusory energy. Mama maya durachaya. Krishna's energy is so strong that even though you know you're going to suffer, you're still attached to suffering. And mama maya durachaya. But mama eva ye prapajante, the solution is if you surrender to Krishna. So, I'll tell one final story about a person who tried his best to enjoy, eventually surrendered to Krishna and got rid of the suffering in the material world. This is the story of, this is an interesting story in the Bhagavatam of King Yayati. King Yayati, let's see, let me tell more of the story. No, let's tell the story of King Yayati. So King Yayati was a great king, and he hadn't at that particular point encountered his wife, the better half. What are they saying? Better half or whatever. And he was out hunting. So at the same time, something happened that was very interesting. There were two girls. Their names were Sarmishta and Devyani. Devyani was the daughter of Shukracharya, the guru of the demons. And Sarmishta was the daughter of this king, Rishabharva. And so they were enjoying and swimming in the river. And when they came out of the river, Sarmishta, the daughter of the king, she put on the clothes of Devyani. And Devyani, being a Brahmin, and Brahmins sometimes are very proud of their Brahminical status, just like we were talking to someone last night who was born in a Shudra family in India. And I was amazed at how he was treated just because he was born in a Shudra family in India. I mean, he was basically treated like a dog by the higher caste. So, in any case, Devyani got so angry that her clothes were put on by this Kshatriya lady that she challenged her to a fight, and of course, Kshatriyas are much more strong, or they're stronger than Brahmanas are. Even Kshatriya ladies are stronger than Brahmin ladies. It's a fact. Ladies can also be of the four different varnas. And you have Brahmin ladies, Kshatriya ladies, Vaishya ladies, and Shudra ladies. It's not that sometimes people make propaganda that ladies are only of one varna. But they have different varnas, just like the men do. That's why you arrange things with that in mind, arrange marriages. So, anyway, there was a fight, so Sarmishta threw Devyani in the well. And because Devyani hadn't had an opportunity to put her own clothes back, she was naked in the well. And so what happened is this king was walking by, King Yayati, he was walking by the well, looked down at the well, wanted to get some water, but instead discovered a naked girl in the well. And so he extended his hand. Obviously, he wasn't a brahmachari. A brahmachari would just say, Hare Krishna Maya, my boy. He never died. But he wasn't the wife anyway. That's actually interesting. So he extended his hand, and he took her out of the well, and she said, we have to get married now. And he said, that's not really appropriate because I am a Kshatriya and you're a Brahmin. And she said, yeah, I understand that, but I was cursed to not marry a Brahmin. That's a whole other story I'm not going to tell right now. But she was cursed by someone named Kacha, the son of Rahashpati. So she said, I was cursed not to marry a Brahmin, so let's get married. And so he was shocked at the sudden marriage proposal. So he went to Shukracharya, her father, and he said, is this all right? And the father said, yes, this seems like a good arrangement, but, there's always these buts, you know, people stick in your face. I'm really angry at her friend, Sarmishta, and you, Yayati, should not have a relationship with any other lady. And for a Kshatriya, that's quite a difficult instruction. So what happened is that Shukracharya did try to go to the king, who was the father of Sarmishta, and he was getting ready to curse him. And the king said, no, instead, my daughter should remain as your daughter's servant. Sarmishta should remain as Devyani's servant and go to Yayati as her servant. But she cannot have any relationship with Yayati. So anyway, so they both went with the Yayati. There was a marriage ceremony, and Devyani gave birth to two sons. And then Sarmishta, she approached the king in a secluded place, and she said, I love you too. And as a result, there were some children born. And when Devyani experienced or saw that her husband had had a relationship with her friend, who she hated at that particular point, she ran to her father, and her father said, as a punishment, your husband will be cursed with old age. So all of a sudden, he became old, like really old, like 90, 100 years old. You know, people get old and look like prunes. A prune is a plum, an old plum. But, you know, sometimes I tell people who want to get married, I said, you want to get married? All right, talk to your wife or prospective wife's mother and grandmother and see if you can still tolerate. So, because that's what you look like in 30, 40, 50 years. Because when you're young, you don't think like that. It's like this principle that we see everybody else die, but we think, I'm not going to die. And when you're young, the principle is you see everybody else get old, but you think, you're not going to get old. You should be young. You know, when I was a young brahmachari, I felt like that too. But now you look in the mirror and you just wonder who's looking back at you. Good old days. So anyway, so he was cursed to get old, and then as an old, feeble old man, he couldn't enjoy anymore. So you would think, you know, he had enough experience, he would be finished with his material enjoyment. But he wasn't. So he begged, he went to Shukracharya, and he begged, my dear Shukracharya, please help me, save me from this most despicable situation where I'm just like an old man and I can't enjoy my life anymore with my young wife. And Shukracharya said, okay, here's the deal. Go to one of your sons and see if one of your sons will give you his youth in exchange for your old age. So he went to one son, his son's name was Yadu, and Yadu said, no way, Dad. I'm not going to do this. No, because Yadu was the forerunner of the whole Yadu dynasty, which is interesting. And the reason he said that is because he really wanted Krishna here as soon as possible, and then he did this thing with exchanging the old age, it would actually delay Krishna's appearance later on in the Yadu dynasty. So anyway, so then he finally went to this son, Puru. And Puru said, yes, Dad, whatever you want, Dad, you can have my youth. So Puru was given old age, and immediately he became an old man. And the father became young, he started enjoying his young life again. After about 1,000 years of enjoyment, he said to his wife, I have a story to tell you. He said, once upon a time, there was a goat, a male goat. And the male goat got attracted. He dug a she-goat out of a well. So it's like a metaphorical story. Metaphorical means he's telling a story about animals that actually refers to him and his wife. I mean, sometimes like that, if you have to preach to someone, it's better not to tell them directly they're in Maya. It's better just to tell a story. Because, what is it? Upadeshu hi morganam prakopayana shante. You can tell a fool or give a fool good instructions, just makes them angry. Like when Narada Muni was preaching to King Priyavrata, he preached to him by telling him the story of Paranjana. You know that story? Paranjana's story. So, Narada Muni said, just like once upon a time there was a king, O king. So it was apparent he was referring to the king, but telling the story. So anyway, so this Yayati, he was telling the story to his wife, Devyani. He said, once upon a time there were two goats, and the two goats got married. And anyway, and one goat, the lady goat, was previously owned by a Brahmin. And so what happened is that this male goat, he had a relationship with another goat, with another she-goat. And then what happened is the female goat went to her owner, the Brahmin, and complained, and as a result they cut off his masculinity, the he-goat's masculinity. And then he went back to the Brahmin, and the Brahmin had restored the masculinity. And he described it, we're just like a bunch of goats, dear. Imagine so much of your wife. We're just a bunch of goats. Is goat? Is there, you have a book that says goat on it or something?
No.
What is it? A boat. Oh, I didn't see it. I was just thinking that would be very humorous. So, we're just like a bunch of goats. And when he said that to his wife, and they understood, they talked philosophy, and he decided to renounce this world. But when he renounced this world, he actually took shelter, which the Prabhupada talks about here in the purport. He took shelter of Vaishnava, because by Vaishnava's association, the spirit of renunciation, and as we said yesterday, it's not renunciation per se, but it's a spirit of attachment to Krishna, a taste for Krishna consciousness becomes awakened, and then you have a higher taste. That's renunciation. Otherwise, simply renouncing, doing a don't, won't make you renouncing this material world. As we've seen in so many stories, where great sages, they try to renounce the world, and then the demigods lured them, and we talked about this yesterday, and that didn't help them. But you have to have a higher focus, a higher taste. So, getting back to ourselves in devotional service, if we really want to be determined, a.k.a. Hakudanandana, then we have to have a higher focus or higher goal in life, connected with Krishna. And then, if we're focused, yavasayadmagabhudhirekehakudanandana, then we can simply ignore all the allurements of this world. If your goal, if your sankalpa is connected with Krishna, you know, becoming Krishna conscious, pleasing your spiritual master, then renunciation is quite easy. It's not that difficult. Because, I mean, for example, let's say someone asks me to go, I mean, I'll give you something that really happened. I just flew to a city in the United States visiting some disciples, and they thought they would show me a good time. And they said, would you like to go, would you like to go parachute jumping? We'll pay for it. You know, we'll take you. You can go parachute jumping. And actually, my whole life I always wanted to do something like that. So, free fall. First you get free fall. And then you, do you understand? Jump out of a plane. You've heard of that before? What? Oh, you call it skydiving. Okay, so they said, you know, we'll take you. And I was thinking about it for a second. And then I thought, first of all, it wouldn't be pleasing to Krishna. Because I said, the whole goal, my self-identity is as a servant of Krishna. And this doesn't fit my sense of identity to do that. And then I also thought, if I got hurt, how will I explain it to my disciples? You know, I was preaching one day, or then I thought, well, maybe I can just take a Hare Krishna banner behind me and then flying through the air, and I'll say this part of my preaching program. But seriously speaking, the reason I didn't do it, and they were ready to take me, you know, they wanted to show me a good time, was it's just not how my focus, my goal in life, even though I was attracted to it. You know, it sounds attractive, doesn't it? Fly through the air. Anyone here ever gone skydiving? You have. You know, it sounds very attractive. But my focus in life is pleasing Krishna. So therefore, it's easier to renounce something. And it doesn't disturb you at that particular point. So in other words, I didn't do it because I thought negatively about it. Many times people renounce things because of negativity towards that object. And that negativity, or attraction and repulsion, are opposite sides of the same coin. Like if you're always saying about a sense object, you know, that's maya, that's nonsense. I remember the early days of the movement, that's how the brahmacharis would deal with their attraction to women. They would just consider all the women to be maya devis. And that means they were meditating on them more. Isn't that like the story of Prabhupada told about the two sannyasis who were crossing the river? One of the sannyasis helped the lady cross the river, and the other sannyasi didn't, and the other sannyasi, the whole time afterwards, that sannyasi was just thinking about it. He was talking under his breath. He was saying, oh, how did that sannyasi do that? You know, it's all maya. Oh, I can't stand it. This idiot. You know, like that. He's not qualified. He just put on white. So anyway, so what happened is that after a few miles, a few kilometers, because it was in Europe. So after a few kilometers, he said to the sannyasi who carried the lady or helped the lady cross the river, he said, why did you do this? You violated the Dharma. He said, I only carried her across the river, and you were carrying her for like 20 kilometers. So the whole point is when you think negatively, try to give something up negatively, or you have some aversion to something, then you're just as attached to it, and perhaps even more attached. You know, aversion, anger, attachment, by what comes to is angry at Krishna, or, you know, averse to Krishna, or hateful towards Krishna, that will affect it more intense than some positive emotion. So the way we become detached is simply thinking of what our goal, mission, and who we're supposed to be. Like what I do, I'm just going to end this right now. Whenever I decide what I'm going to do in a particular instance, I think, what would Prabhupada say? And I put Prabhupada before me, you know, hypothetically, and say, if I say to Prabhupada, I'd like to go skydiving. Would Prabhupada say, that's very good, my blessings. Could I, in my wildest dream, actually think like that? No. No, I mean, obviously. So people should imbibe or internalize their spiritual master like that. What would Prabhupada say if I did this? You know, that's really... And I explain that to people who have left our movement to form other movements outside of the Krishna consciousness movement. I say, do you think Prabhupada would say, I'm pleased with you? And you do think like that? And if you do think like that, what sort of Prabhupada are you thinking of? It's not the same Prabhupada I have. And it's obvious. So one should continually ask, and that is taking guidance from the Super Soul, because the spiritual master is the manifest representative of the Super Soul. And then you're always in the straight and narrow path if you do that. Okay. And that happy note. So any questions or comments? Quick questions and comments. Or problems or issues or arguments or disturbances. Yeah.
Maharaj, you just telling your own example of parachuting. What about greenhouse to these men like?
Yeah, they can parachute. It's safer.
Disneyland?
Well, I would say that they have a license. This is interesting. They have a license for sense gratification. Of course, if you have a driving license, does that mean you can go above the speed limit? No, I don't think so. You can. Do you have these things like radar detectors here?
Yeah.
You do?
Speed cameras.
No, speed cameras. But you know where the speed cameras are because you have them on your GPS, right? Oh, they're hidden ones. That's terrible. Okay, yeah, radar. I mean, actually, even the cameras have radar to detect your speed. So you don't have that with Krishna. There's no Krishna detector, super soul detector. Actually, Krishna isn't the super soul. Super soul is always there. So you have a license for sense gratification, but you have to be careful not to exceed the terms of the license. So the question is, can you go to Disneyland or Disney World? Or I think there should be, with the children, there has to be some recreation, yeah. If it's just you and your wife, I have some doubts about that. You know, children should have a happy time in their life. But if you just leave the children behind and you and your wife go to these places, go skydiving together, I don't think that's appropriate. What do you think, Rupa? But if you go take your child, then you can go skydiving with your children. No, don't take that literally. But you know, there has to be recreation, even for sannyasis. I mean, let's get back to the point. The sannyasis also need some recreation. I mean, I ride a bicycle. I used to play volleyball every day. Remember, Virginia Galacha?
Right.
Until he defeated me and I got depressed. And I gave it up. No, I threw my arm out, actually. So, yeah, we had the whole temple. I mean, there's things you can do, yeah. I mean, I've taken a whole temple whitewater rafting. You know what whitewater rafting is? I've taken a whole temple, like 15, 20 people, whitewater rafting. Going down for 5 hours the rapids. It was fun. But what we did, we made it a Krishna conscious experience. It was like team building. And at the same time, we told the captain of the boat, because it's a professional captain, that every time you want us to row on the right side, you say Nitai. And every time you want us to row on the left side, Goranga. So the whole trip down the rapids, he was going, Nitai, Nitai, Goranga, Goranga, Nitai, Nitai. And he became a devotee. Nice story, isn't it? You can Krishnaize your recreation. We do need recreation. Krishna says one should be moderate in his recreation. So there's no problem with that. Actually, one time I went to Disney World with another sannyasi. I have to admit it. Time for confession here, you know. It was actually Dr. Takamaraj. So he said, I want to see the rides here. Because it was in my TV season. So it was, we were in Florida together. And he said, I want to see the rides to see what we can do in my apartment. I said, yeah, sounds like a good idea. And then we both went on the ride. It was fun. And we were chatting the whole time, but we Krishnaized it. Another time, he took me to an amusement park ride where they were selling amusement park rides. And so we went into this 3D experience where you're in this capsule that tilts. And you can, you know, you put on these glasses, you're like going through outer space. You understand what I mean? Anyone's experienced that? And then, I got sick. Good enough. So, anyway, I guess you can dovetail different things like that. What do you think, Krishna Kavacha? Sounds good. So, I mean, devotees shouldn't be too, let's say, uptight about these things. You know, there can be some recreation. But as far as skydiving, I don't think devotees should be generally risking their lives like that. And that's also, it's a lot of money. I couldn't think spending Krishna's money on such a thing like that. But, you know, recreation, you know, play some volleyball or... What's that?
What is that, video game?
Video games. It fries the brain. And really... I mean, if you're going to be controlling drones and killing people, then it may be good training for you. But usually we don't have too many positions like that in the Krishna conscious movement, controlling drones. So I don't think it's the best thing for developing finer brain tissues to think about the science of self-realization. Usually too much of this TV or videos really dulls the brain. I mean, of course, I'm not saying it's against the principles. Yeah, your question.
I was going to say, what about the old film? I watched a film once with Bhakti Tourism.
Which film?
It was The Rock.
The Rock?
Yeah. It's Sean Connery and Nicholas Cage. It's a good action film, actually.
Well, I mean, if you're learning how to do films like Bhakti Shumar's was, Dev, is for doing Krishna conscious films, you could take it as an educational thing. Otherwise, I mean, think of your identity. You know, I'm a servant of Krishna. You know, what would... I mean, at the same time, you have the example of Prabhupada watching a Charlie Chaplin movie on an airplane. You know, so you don't want to be too heavy on yourself about these things. I'm not advising devotees to go watch films or, you know, watch The Terminator. Or anything like that. But I think it's a question of judgment. See yourself as Krishna's servant and do what you have to do to please Krishna. And if that means a little bit of recreation, you need recreation, you know, sunshine, exercise, or whatever. If it enhances your service to Krishna, or if you need some relaxation, if you need to sleep a little bit more, even though sleeping is not direct Krishna consciousness, do it. I don't want to give any hard and fast rules, but it's a question of judgment. But skydiving is hard for me to figure out how it would fit in. Any other questions about this controversial topic? Yeah.
We were talking about if
someone
is
explicitly
attracted to some other person, how would they think of rather than
saying,
"Oh, that person is mine," how would they actually think rather than just think, "Oh"?
Well, there's different things that they can. First of all, they can start chanting Hare Krishna, like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, help me, Krishna, help me. And that's a good thing. And then. They can think philosophically how strong Krishna's illusory energy is, and then they should become attracted. Like Prabhupada said, once upon a time there was, this is not Prabhupada said, but once upon a time there was a devotee who wrote a book that the name of the book was The Joys of No Sex. And in the book, he had all these crazy things that if you want to become detached, put yourself in ice cubes in the middle of the winter or something like that. I mean, really, it doesn't cure it. Desires, but I mean, you may not be aware of the desire because you're so cold that you're freezing to death. I mean, like one time, I went swimming in ice in Finland. Can we do that? It's really interesting. So, they have this thing called sauna. You know what a sauna is? A sauna, and you go swimming, you go to the sauna, you go swimming, you go to the sauna, and you're either freezing to death or boiling to death. It's like definitely the material energy. So I went in the water, and after a while, the whole body becomes numb. You can't feel anything. And I had to jump out, of course, before I died. So one could think that they can overcome material desires by putting themselves in ice, or hanging upside down, or all these material things like that. It doesn't work. Prabhupada said the cure for Mr. Lust, he gave Lust a Mr. title. He said the cure for Mr. Lust is to see the beautiful form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engage in deity worship. So you engage, you see Krishna's beautiful form, and Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Krishna Radharani, Balaam, Giriraj, I mean, and then if you all desire joy, society, friendship, and love, don't go to see that smiling boy Govinda is playing his flute on the bank of the Keshi God. That's the solution. You see, Krishna. I mean, I'll tell you just one funny story. Ramanujacharya one time was with his disciples. They're walking on the beach. And there was a man who was walking with his girlfriend on the beach too. And he was fanning her. And he held an umbrella over her head, just like in a Rath Yatra. He had a Rath Yatra for his girlfriend. Anyway, so, you know, she girlfriend, Sharana Padma, Kevala Bhakati Sarma, Vandan Vi Sarvadharma Te. Anyway, so he was fanning her. And his Ramanujacharya's, they started to make fun of the guy. Ramanujacharya said, don't make fun of the guy. I want to hear why he's doing that. So he called the guy over. He said, yeah, why are you doing that? And he said, she has such beautiful eyes. You know, there's this one song, oh, what beautiful eyes, what great big beautiful... You ever heard of that song? No. No. Anyway, that's from my generation. So... anyway, so she has such beautiful eyes. And so Ramanujacharya said, if I can show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you like to see that person? And this person's name was Dhanardas. He said, yes. And Ramanujacharya said, come tonight. So he brought him to the temple to see the deity Varada Dharaja, which is in Kanchipuram, this occurred. So he brought him to see the deity, and he looked at the deity's eyes. He said, wow, that's better than my girlfriend's eyes. Wow. And he became detached. But then Ramanujacharya said, you should marry your girlfriend anyway. So he married his girlfriend, and they lived happily ever after. They were two of the best disciples of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So they were married, but they were so detached, they even allowed, there's another story, allowed the brahmacharis to steal her jewelry. I mean, that's really a good point. So, deity worship is so important. It's for everybody. Right, Machine Director? I'm so many of my friends. But, there's also what? The Goswami said. I mean, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they engage in deity worship. I mean, every devotee should worship. If you're not in the state, you worship the deity by doing some other service. You clean the floor. The floor of the temple room is an expansion of Baladeva. Baladeva, universe, right? So, what is that? Yeah. That the devotee, we chant every morning, that the spiritual master along with the disciples cleanses the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that cleaning the temple, Prabhupada said, is the same thing as dressing the deities or worshiping the deities. So it's very important to learn this art of deity worship. And that keeps us in the personal focus too. Because without doing deity worship, we tend to become impersonally focused. Because it helps us remember that God is a person. Unless we see, because we're visually oriented, we don't remember. Okay, I think we should end because we're way beyond our allotted time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Srila Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. You can take it. Govinda.